Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Now, apart from her long and fruitful career as an actor, Miriam Margolyes can rightfully be called a British national treasure. She just released her autobiography called This Much Is True, and she joins us now on News Talk. Miriam, good afternoon to you.
Oh, bless you. Hello. Good afternoon.
I saw a picture, because I was looking this up on Twitter, I saw a picture today of you appearing on University Challenge. Did that happen or was that fake news on Twitter?
Well, it was about 40 years ago, but yes, more than 40 years, I did appear on University Challenge.
And how did it go?
We won the first one, we lost the second. And it became well known because I used an expletive when I got an answer wrong.
And was that a kind of, I assume that was a very serious offence in those days.
I don't think it had ever been done before, although it's been done many times since.
Yes.
But it's rather embarrassing to have been the first person to say the word which rhymes with muck on television.
And was that, were you representing Cambridge or kind of a particular college in Cambridge?
Yeah, Newnham College, all girls college. I loved it very much. I was there from 1960 to 63. So it would have been in 1962 and I was born in 1941 and now I'm 80. So it's a long time ago.
Yeah. And you did enjoy it, though, because I've read that, well, your involvement with Footlights was you didn't, or at least you didn't like a lot of the people in it.
I didn't like specific people that I was in a show with, the Footlights Review, because they were very competitive and they didn't think that this short, fat, pushy Jew was capable of getting laughs. And when I did get laughs, they were annoyed.
Right. And did they, were they explicit in their annoyance about that?
Oh, yes. They sent me to Coventry. That's an expression that we use for not speaking to someone, for cutting them as if they didn't exist. Mm. It was very painful. I wept. I never got over it. And I feel angry that it happened. They were cruel.
And this was John Cleese and Bill Oddie and Graham Chapman. Did they ever apologise to you for that?
Tim Brooke Taylor apologised. He was one of the group. Mm. But the others, no, they haven't.
Have you run into them since? You must have.
I have occasionally, and it the frostiness remains. They have to acknowledge me now, but you know, they're not very nice people, and I don't have to bother with them. But I just thought I'd have my own back and put it in my autobiography because it happened.
Yes. Apart from the fact that you were getting laughs and they didn't like that and they wanted to get all the laughs, what else was going on there, do you think? Was it misogyny? Was it anti-Semitism? Was it homophobia?
I can't be sure that it's all of those things, but the background that they came from, you know, the English don't like other people. They don't like women particularly. They don't like Jews. And I think they were very competitive. They didn't like David Frost, for example, because he was lower middle class. And they were very class conscious. Minor public schoolboys. They're the scum of the earth.
Yes. OK, I think we know where you stand on that one.
I think you do.
And so is it, yeah, like, and from what I've read about you, Miriam, since you in school, when you first started going to college, you were very upfront about who you were, what you liked to do, what your opinions were, to the extent that perhaps that might scare people. And was that a deliberate choice on your part that I am going to be the person I am, or are you just built that way?
I think I'm just built that way. I don't mean to upset people. It's just the way everything pops out. And I'm embarrassed if I've hurt people, but I don't think I've really ever hurt people because I don't say nasty things to people. I just say true things about myself, mostly.
Mm. But it would have required, especially back then, a degree of bravery.
I I don't think so, because I didn't see any other way of behaving. I'm just who I am. I'm me. I've always spoken like this. People at school with me will tell you I was just like that at school. And I suppose most people grow out of it and stop being a naughty schoolgirl. And I never did.
Mm. And so after college, did you go straight into acting? Did you do anything else in you know, for an interim period?
When I left Cambridge, I didn't have a job to go to. So I did market research, which involves talking to strangers sometimes about the most intimate things, like what contraceptive methods they use, that kind of thing, or sometimes what dog biscuits they use. It just whatever the product was.
Not together, presumably.
Never got that muddled up.
And was this stopping people on the streets?
Usually it was going to their houses. One of the products was the Children's Britannica, and it was a very, not a nice way of doing it, because you would go to the door and say, have you any children? And, the, you know, depending on the answer, you'd say, do you care about their education? And of course, every parent would say, yes, I care very much.
Mm.
And I'd say, well, then I think you really have to let me into your house to tell you about this product, which I am selling, which is going to guarantee your children a better life.
Yes.
And of course, it was all a load of baloney, but that's what I was trained to do. And I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I didn't like doing it.
I actually, a million years ago, I just did the training course. I didn't actually do it for selling Encyclopedia Britannicas in Dublin. And they seemed to depict that it was tremendously easy to get in somebody's front door. And essentially all you had to say was, your neighbours have bought one. And then they usher you in straight away and start writing checks. It didn't actually turn out that way, and certainly in my experience. You also had a job, though. This is, I assume this is one of your early acting roles. You were Sexy Sonia in a tape for Anne Summers.
Yes, you're picking out from my book, which is actually quite a serious book in some ways. You're picking out the snot, the grit.
Sorry, that's just me.
The bad bits, and making me sound like a tart.
Oh,
and
I'm sorry. Really, I'm not trying to do that.
I'm really not a tart.
No.
But I did do. I must be honest. Yes, I did do. What I call a take-home wanker's kit, a sort of all audio, nothing visual.
Mm.
It was a text that was designed to arouse the lazy penis.
Right. And did Anne Summers give you some, you know, some degree of direction as to what they were looking for?
Well, they gave me the text in the back room of the Anne Summers shop in the warehouse, the shelves being full of scrotum twisters and nipple clamps and that kind of thing. And I'd never seen anything like that, because my own sexuality is rather, it's gay, but it's straight, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
I don't go in for electrical goods. And there, I just read the text in a sort of sexy growl. And they were pleased with that. And then we went off to record next week. And it's very exhausting doing pornographic tapes.
Yeah.
Because you have to keep breathing and hyperventilating. And at the end of the session, there's no climax or fulfillment. I just had a headache. But I did have £300 to take away.
Well, indeed. And you earned your money. And actually, on a kind of a related subject, I did want to ask you about your partner, Heather. You've been together a tremendously long time, and everything I've read about it is lovely, because you are together, but you both have your own. Now, obviously, it's been difficult during the pandemic, but you're together, but you also have your own lives at the same time.
Yes, well, she's a very different kind of person from me. She's reserved, serious. She's got a great sense of humour, but she doesn't need people the way that I do. And I think our relationship has lasted for 53 years because we don't live together, but we haven't seen each other for a year. And I can't stand that. I'm really desperate So when the film finishes that I'm making at the moment here in Wales, I'm going off to Tuscany where she's on holiday and I will see her again. And although, you know, it's not the most wildly sexual relationship now, because we are both 80. Well, I'm 80 and she's 78. There is an enormous joy and love and satisfaction in being together and just laughing together and looking at each other and sharing books and food and thoughts. And that's what companionship is. And I am deeply grateful for it.
And what are you shooting in Wales at the moment?
It's a film called My Happy Ending with Andy McDowell as the star. And it's set in a cancer ward with four women talking about their hopes and dreams for the future and how they deal with the pain of cancer and the fantasies that they employ to make life bearable. It's an enchanting film. I wanted to do it because of the script, and so did the others. Sally Phillips, Tamsin Gregg, and now this is an Indian name, I've got to get it right, Rakhi Thakra, who was in Sex Education. She's a wonderful actress. And we've all bonded together, and it's been a most tremendous experience. You know, people say that women don't get on. It's bollocks. We love being together. It's a very happy group. And I'll be sad, in a way, when it finishes. But, you know, I need to get to see Heather.
Miriam, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Miriam Margolyes's autobiography is called This Much Is True, and you can keep an eye out for that movie that will be coming out presumably next year or so.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.